brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
How much do you want to win? Are you diving on the floor for balls? Are you willing to take charges? Are you willing to gas out? Are you drenched in sweat when you're playing and you're still going? It just really shows how much you want to win when you're displaying that motor. And I think everybody should have that at the college level.
Adam Gonzalez is in his second season as an assistant coach for the men's basketball program at Concordia University, Texas. Gonzalez joined the staff during the 2016-17 season as a student assistant coach, working on scouting reports, practices, player development, and summer camp itineraries for the program. He has also been a coach with the AAU team Centex Attack for the past 4 years. Gonzalez was promoted to the role of assistant coach on April 5, 2021. Prior to Concordia, Texas, the Austin, Texas native played basketball at Richland College and St. Philip's College before returning back home to finish his degree in multidisciplinary studies. Hey, Hoopheads. This January, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball introduced their all-new CT Plus machine with a 21.5-inch touchscreen that allows players to train offline, build custom drills, compete in multiplayer mode, and view their stats in real time. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on their Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Pete Marion, the head men's basketball coach at John Carroll University, and you're listening to the Hoopshead Podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Take a second to grab a notebook before you listen to this episode with Adam Gonzalez, men's basketball assistant coach at Concordia University, Texas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this morning, but I am pleased to be joined by Adam Gonzalez, men's basketball assistant coach at Concordia University, Texas. Adam, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Hey, Mike. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. We are thrilled to be able to have you on after a few technical difficulties this morning. We are ready to go. Adam, just want to start by asking you how you got into the game of basketball as a kid. What were some of your first experiences with the game?
Just a neighborhood, honestly. That's what we did. We played every sport, football, basketball. My dad was a boxer, so I was heavy into boxing as well. But basketball was something that was always challenging to me. It was probably a sport I was, the least best at. So in a weird way, it motivated me to kind of stay in the gym, stay working on my game. So that's kind of how I got started into it.
As you were going through and in your playing career, was there a time where you knew that at some point you wanted to be a coach, or was that something that came to you a little bit later?
Came to me a little bit later. Honestly, I was so, headstrong on playing college basketball. So, I had no idea I was going to be a coach. I just knew I wanted to be in the game in some form or fashion, be around it, even after I stopped playing.
What was your first thought process after you got done playing when it came to being a coach? What sparked you saying, I really want to get into coaching. I think it'd be a right place for me. Was it just the fact that, hey, my playing career is coming to an end? Just talk a little bit about what made you make the decision.
It was kind of that. I was already, kind of jumping to a JUCO to another one. you know, I wanted to finish school, obviously, and you know, some of my mentors, like you've met, Nelson Taroba, who got me into coaching. I've always done camps, even when I played with him, and he was my assistant coach in high school, and he kind of made me look at things and have a certain perspective on basketball and just the way you prepare for it. And that kind of interest, you know, it got me interested in wanting to coach, just that approach. It gave me a certain level of confidence, when I played and looked at the game. So, you know, when I was done playing, I immediately jumped into coaching, with him, with a AU program, a summer program, called Syntex Attack. And that's kind of what got me jump started into it.
What'd you like about coaching AAU?
You know, it was all like an experiment, you know. Yep. You know, I felt like I prepared the same that I would now, but you know, it was fun. I got to, everything was new, you know, everything I was learning was new, and dealing with different personalities, and I was fresh off of playing, so I still kind of had like a certain level of confidence, like, you know, that kind of, hey, I could still play type of thing. But
right.
But I love just the rapid game, Okay. I got to try this next time, or maybe I'll try these type of, you know, lineups, or maybe I'll try this type of offense. And so it just was a big experiment, and that's what I loved about it the most.
What was something that, when you think back to that time and those first couple experiences, what was something that you felt like, hey, I'm pretty good at this aspect of coaching, but maybe there's something else that I struggled with, or that was maybe a little bit more difficult. So what was something that you were good at right out of the gate, maybe something that you had to really learn and work on your craft when it came to coaching?
Just understanding not everybody was like me. Yeah. Like not that I'm like this amazing and perfect person, but you know, just my approach, my desperation to find the right answer, or my desperation to get something right. You know, that's something I had to learn, and just try to motivate different personalities and spend a little time learning who they are so that I know how to motivate them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think as you get to know your players, and especially depending on what level you're at, the amount of time that you get to spend with them, building those relationships is something that is really, really important. Because as you know, you can reach those kids better and get more out of them once you build that relationship both on and off the basketball court. It just makes it easier for you to push them harder and get more out of them. As you were moving through and continue to coach AAU, what's the first opportunity that you get on a more formal level to go in and coach, and how do you end up getting to Concordia?
The first opportunity I got was Hill Country Christian. It was a private school. Middle school level, 7th and 8th grade. You know, one of the parents I coached in AU, she kind of suggested to the AD that they'll give me an opportunity, interview me, and that was kind of my first opportunity to kind of build a program and have a more formal season. And from there, you know, Coach Taroba, as I mentioned, he had a connection with Coach Bonowitz at Concordia. And Coach Bonowitz actually recruited me out of high school. So he knew me from there. And that's kind of how I got that opportunity there at Concordia to volunteer there for 3 years before I got hired on to a full time.
So there are a lot of young coaches out there that are listening. Talk about your experience as a volunteer and just why you felt it was important to do that, and again, what the challenges were as you were going through it, because there's a lot of coaches out there, as you know, that are trying to break into it. So just give us a little bit of what your experience was like, and maybe some advice that you might give for somebody else who's in a similar position to where you are.
For sure. I think you got to love it, and you can't look at it as a, you know, as a status thing. You know, you got to strictly look at it like an opportunity. Everything that, you know, that you get is an opportunity. And so when I first got there at Concordia, I was literally just wiping the floor off if somebody fell. You know, I was doing the laundry. I was, you know, just a fly on the wall. You know, I did zero basketball the first couple months. And I was just learning what was going on. And I think the toughest part for me was the financial piece, you know, because you're not getting paid and you got school still, you know, you're trying to work, you're trying to pay your own bills. So, you know, I was doing everything from doing Uber Eats. I was had a side job on the weekend. I would do plasma, like I would take anything I could because I just knew it was, you know, not a lot of people got to have that kind of opportunity. You know, it wasn't about getting paid for me at first. You know, I just wanted to just get as much information as I can, especially from somebody like Coach Bonowitz, who has such a, you know, great playing career and been at Concordia for now 20 years. And, you know, his unique pressing style that I've never really been around. So it was, you know, very interesting to me at first. And, you know, he gave me an opportunity and then he allowed me to do scouts and, you know, ask for my suggestions every once in a while, and let me do player development. So it was kind of just one opportunity that got to lead to another. And I just wanted to be around as much as I could early on.
In those first couple months, as you're in there, and obviously, as you said, there's a lot that you have to do outside of the basketball arena to be able to just make a living and sustain yourself. How much time were you spending? When I say basketball, I mean washing the floors, doing the laundry, all that stuff. How much time were you spending in that volunteer position on a daily basis? Can you ballpark like how much time you were around the office and around practice and doing the laundry and all the things? In other words, how much time did you have outside of basketball to be able to work your other jobs? And just give us an idea what your schedule was like.
Oh, man. It's not. I don't suggest everybody do this, but I would wake up probably at 6 a.m. because I had to have fine time to do my homework. And I was, you know, Coach Bonowitz, if, you know, he basically told me, you know, if you can be around as much as you want to. So, you know, if I wasn't in class, if I wasn't studying, if I wasn't working, I was just going to sit in the office and wait until he gave me something to do. So I wanted to make sure I waked up as early as I could to get done with my responsibilities, whether that was, okay, I'm going to Uber now at 6 a.m. Before he gets to the office at 9, or I got homework. Let me just knock that out this morning so that I don't miss out on any time of sitting in the office during the day. And so I'll sit in the office, class at 11, get out of class, come back to the office. If he had any, you know, player development opportunities, I would ask them. I would ask guys if they need to get worked out or you don't want to get shots up. So I'll be in there for 2 to 3 hours. Sometimes I'll eat my lunch in there. And then, you know, we'll have practice at 4, 5, 6 o'clock sometimes. Get out of practice, go Uber at night, and then repeat, do the same thing, you know, every day. So... That was kind of.
I can only imagine what that was like. I can only imagine, and you're not the only one. There's lots of guys that have been in that position.
Oh yeah,
you know that. Sure. There's, as you said, it's an opportunity, and there aren't that many of them out there. And so there are times. Oh. Certainly, I think I've heard a lot of coaches give the advice of, look, you got to be willing to travel. You got to be able to work for free to kind of get your foot in the door. And I think your story really illustrates that pretty well. When you were going through those early times and you're just sort of learning, you're around Coach Bonowitz and you're hanging around the office, were you taking notes and formally writing stuff down, or were you just kind of committing things to memory? How'd you go about sort of internalizing all the things that you were learning?
Definitely notes. I don't really depend on my memory too much on things. I try to write as much as I can. And you know, whether it be on a laptop, Google Docs, or just on straight paper, or trying to get copies of the you know, practice plans and video. Every once in a while, he'll allow me to take, you know, videos of the practice just so I can start connecting things and just try to ask him as many questions as I could without annoying him after practice. But yeah, definitely notes. I suggest that everybody, you know, take notes and, and you know, try to document them, keep them as much as you can, because I wasn't always the best at that either, you know, just kind of keeping them organized in folders or whatnot. But yeah,
in the moment, that's not always easy to do. Like, you might have good intentions, but yeah, trying to keep all your stuff organized and thinking, hey, I just saw that, or I need to write this down. And then obviously, as you're running around and doing a million jobs and everything that you had to do with the basketball program as well, I can imagine where sometimes it's easy for things to slip past anybody. But certainly somebody who is as busy as you, completely understandable how trying to keep all that straight and organized can be a challenge. As you transition into, I'm going to say, a quote unquote real position, what did that look like? What was the conversation like when you became an official member of the staff?
Recruiting. that was the conversation. Just recruiting and how important it is. Because initially, I didn't have any interest in recruiting. I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to be a head coach or a high school coach, and I wanted to learn as much as I could, you know, from his pressing style, going into it, and try to get as much as information as I could about how to run a program. I had no interest in coaching college basketball, to be honest. But, you know, after a while, I gained a lot of interest in that. And then, you know, coming into my full-time position, I fell in love with recruiting and just the process of it and the time, the opportunity to help build our team and the kind of pieces we're bringing in, the kind of culture we're creating, like all that stuff. I fell in love with recruiting.
All right, let me go back to the recruiting in a second, but I want to ask you about the idea of wanting to be a high school coach versus wanting to be a college coach. So when you set out on this journey and you have in your back of your mind that I want to coach at the high school level, what was it about high school at that time that appealed to you more than college basketball as you were kind of getting into it, sort of getting a feel for what the coaching world was all about? Why high school?
Definitely develop, having the opportunity to develop young people, and building a program from the ground up, you know, taking freshmen, building up that, communicating with different coaches to build that program and to share one, you know, one voice, one, you know, mindset. And just the everyday, you know, I was interested in teaching, you know, as well. And just my experience in high school. I had a great experience in high school. I had great coaches, and I kind of wanted to follow up with that. And I thought college was going to be a lot of other things outside of coaching that you had to do. But obviously all the high school coaches listening, they, you know, there's a lot of stuff you have to do as a high school coach, yep, too.
Absolutely.
It's not,
absolutely.
You know,
there's a lot of high school coaches out there that are like, my 6 hours of teaching every day, if I could just get to the hoops part of it.
No doubt. No doubt. And I learned that when, you know, my former head coach in high school, he allowed me to kind of be around the program throughout the year, go to booster clubs and kind of mirror, you know, their whole day. And I was like, oh, man. You don't get to do just straight basketball. Like, you have to be in these meetings. You have to go to class. You have to prepare for your class and almost cram in. You know, coaching was a afterthought of your everyday, right, you know, job. So that was all interesting to me as well.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the recruiting piece of it. So how do you go about, once you identify players that you guys are interested in, one of the keys, obviously, is then building a relationship with that player and their family so that they feel comfortable and that eventually they want to sign on and come to Concordia. How do you go about, what's the key for you in terms of building relationships with players and their families in the recruiting process?
Definitely being honest with them, letting them know the challenges of being there at Concordia in terms of like the things we do, the everyday work we do, you know, and I like to get that out the way. I like to see their expressions, their reactions. I like to open the floor for questions, because what I don't want to do is surprise somebody and they get here and then it doesn't work out. I want to see if they fit our culture. I want to see if they're willing to do, you know, the things we want to do to push our team. And I want to know if they're a good person. You know, I want to know if we're bringing in somebody who's not only talented, but, you know, somebody who's going to contribute to our culture and contribute to what we want to accomplish. So, you know, that number one, and making sure that their head is on right, you know, that their goal is to, you know, finish school, not just be here for basketball, and just try to get a feel for what kind of person they are. 'Cause you do, you know, you get to recruit them over time and you text with them, talk to them, go watch them play, but you don't really find out who they are until you see how they respond to adversity and when they get there. So I try to expedite that by just being straight up front. What do you think about this day when we have to, you know, you have to wake up in the morning, you got to go to class, you got study hall 9, individual study hall 9, you got to work out at 11, you got weights at 3, and then we got practice at 6. What does that sound like to you? You know, how does that sound like, you know, if you had a bad day and then you have to do that, how are you going to respond to that? So, you know, and that's not every day, but I would like to know, you know, what, you know, how they would respond to those type of things.
Definitely a different world from high school basketball. Let's put it that way, without question.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When you are evaluating players, do you have a preference in terms of watching them with their high school team, with their AAU team? Are you looking for similar things, different things? Are there tips or just what are you looking for in AAU versus high school basketball? And do you prefer one setting over the other?
No, not at all. I think, I guess when I go see AAU basketball, I want to see just what their ability is. I think that there is a little bit of, you know, not every AU program, but there's more freedom out there for them to kind of, you know, explore some of their skill sets. But it's the same three things I look for: just niche, motor, and how they defend. Whether you're playing, you know, summer ball or high school ball, it is nice to see them in high school ball. Just, you know, from an execution standpoint, you know, talking to coach, maybe asking him, hey, what are y'all trying to do here? You know, what's your offense? How are y'all using him? You know, how's he contributed? And now, you know, when I watch the game, I can kind of put those things together and see how much that player is trying to follow, you know, his coach's plan.
Talk about those three things that you said you look for. Mm-hmm. So, and give us a breakdown of when you talk about niche and you talk about motor and you talk about being able to play defense. Just give us a detail or two about each one of those, why they're important to you and what you're looking for.
Yeah, I think with their niche, you know, that for me means, you know, what's your transferable skill at the college level? I think if you go to any park in America or any high school game, you know, there'll be a guy out there that could, you know, tries to do everything and you know, try to drop 20 every game, but what do you do that's going to transfer to the next level? Are you an elite rebounder? You know, are you an elite shooter? Can you score it at the college level? Are you a creator? Are you creating and playmaking for other people? So that's what I want to see. I don't want to see you doing things that, you know, that aren't really transferable. And that's not always, you know, that kid's fault, right? He doesn't necessarily know what that means and what that looks like. So that always helps. They have a coach or somebody around them that, you know, reminds them like, hey, this is what you do. This is what can carry you to that next level. So that's what I look for. Do they weigh into that niche? Like, you know, they really put time in on that, especially shooting is one of those ones that pops immediately. And then motor, you know, I think motor just, that's what we look for. And, you know, our team culture is, you know, how much do you want to win? You know, are you diving on the floor for balls? Are you willing to take charges? Are you willing to gas out? You know, are you drenched in sweat when you're playing and you're still going? It just really shows how much you want to win when you're, you know, displaying that motor. And I think everybody should have that at the college level. You know, you're playing at an elite level. And you know, the third one, defense, you know, those two things can go together. But
you know, off ball, are you engaged? Are you detail oriented? You know, you put yourself in good position, and that is also, you know, a effort thing. Are you getting in the stance? Or, you know, how are you putting it all on the line? Does every possession look like the last possession? And not everybody's going to have that, especially, again, it's not always the kid's fault to necessarily know what that looks like. But it is something that we look for.
Let me ask you about niche, because I think this is one that, especially when you're talking about high school players and their parents, I think there's always confusion about, well, what does that mean? Because I think the perception is, right, that when a college coach is at the game, when kids are out there performing, whether it's at the high school level or the AAU level, everybody thinks that they need to score. And they think that that's what they want to show coaches. And clearly, if a player is coming and playing at the college level, most of the time, they're probably going to be a really good scorer. Now, I'm sure there are exceptions to players who are just, you know, super talented on the defensive end of the floor. Or maybe they do lots of other things. Or again, they're a great rebounder. Maybe their offense hasn't come around yet. But for the most part, we're talking about good high school players that can score. So then when you bring those guys into your program, now you're bringing in a kid who's a scorer or who's been a scorer primarily in his career. So how do you guys have conversations with those players when they first get on campus or in the recruiting process about, hey, I know you might be scoring 25 a game, but when you get here, this is kind of where we see you or how you fit. So what do those conversations look like?
Well, we would first address, how are you scoring? You know, are you a point guard and you score off of pick and rolls and you get downhill and you just, you know, do a good job finishing? Are you a guy who scores primarily off the ball, where you're now coming off of screens, you read space well, you know, you're a quick shooter, you're a good shot fake one bounce, all, you know, mid-range shooter, you know, I think it's how you're scoring. And we kind of try and lean in on that, because our goal is to build a good team. You know, okay, we already have this, and I think we have about a few of those guys, but you can do this really well to help our team. You know, you can shoot the ball really well. We don't really need you on the ball as much. We have two of those guys. You know, or you're a versatile four. Okay. Are you a scoring four? Are you a physical rebounding guy? But you think you're a versatile guy. So just kind of, you know what I mean?
Right. No, I know exactly.
Yeah. And so we also put video behind it too. With our recruits, when we bring them on, we show a video of a guy who we think they play like in our system or in the past, to give them an idea or feel for, hey, this is what we're running for this guy, or this is how he's scoring. This is where he's had success. This is kind of where we see you. Not to say we put you in this box, but initially this is where you're going to get, you know, your production. This is where we see you as, hey, and if you want to get out of that box, work on your game outside of practice. You know what I mean? Or in individuals, this is what you need to be working on if you want to get outside that box. But in the meantime, don't run away from that box. Like, this is what's going to help you and our team. So that's kind of what we mean by niche. You know, what are you going to do for our team to help us win? And it be fun for you as well.
I think it's interesting whenever I have this type of conversation with a coach, and I don't care really what level. Once you get beyond high school, we're talking about the different levels of college basketball, or even we've had discussions with guys who've worked at the pros. And, you know, for so long, when a kid's younger, when they're in middle school and they're in high school, most kids, when they're working on their game, they're working to develop their all around game, right? They're working on handling the ball. They're working on their shot. They're working on being able to do different things with the ball in their hands. They might be working on shooting, on coming off screens, or working on pick and roll. There's all these different things that players work on when they're younger, because you want to develop your complete skill set. And then so many coaches talk about exactly what you just talked about, which is you got to understand and know your niche, your role on this team. And when you talk to pro guys, it's especially interesting, because obviously those guys are the best in the world. You're talking about the top, whatever, 450 players in the entire world. And yet there's really only 20 guys, 30 guys in the league that kind of get to do everything and get to do what they want. And the pro guys always talk about you have to be really, really good at what it is that you do that helps a team win. And whether that's just being able to defend multiple positions and shoot corner threes, or maybe you're just a rebounder, or maybe you're the backup point guard and your job is to come in and distribute and whatever. Everybody has right. this role. And so it's interesting that once you get beyond the high school level, that so much of what makes a successful team is getting guys to buy into your role. And then you make another good point of, hey, if you want to expand that role, then you got to work outside the confines of the team. So how do kids react to that type of conversation? Obviously it's different for every kid, right. but when you're having those conversations and kids are sort of coming to the realization, whether it's through the conversation or just over the course of their freshman year, how do kids react to going from, hey, I'm a star to now I've got to fit this role? And how do you guys help them adjust to that?
You know, it's all based off of maturity level, I think, and just what their, you know, support system is. I think it's getting a little better. I think like summer ball programs are doing a better job of communicating that stuff, you know, especially the D3 level stuff, you know, how you see that on Twitter and, you know, social media. Now they talk about not caring about what level they play at. And I think that kind of those things are kind of aligned with each other. But as far as how we help them transition to that, I think we champion that, you know, and we talk about our own experiences. Like me, I was like the third best player on my high school team, but our best player played at Gonzaga and our second best player could have played, you know, he could have played at the college level. Fourth best player played at the college level. You know, so my role wasn't to do everything, you know, so I embraced it and we had a successful team. And that's what we try to tell our recruits is, hey, we want to have a good team. Now, if you want to go score 15 or 20 somewhere, you can, you know, you might even do that here one day. But what we're trying to do is build the best team where guys are the best at their role. The best at what they do and what their niche is. And if we have about 8 to 10 of those guys just really laying into what their role is, man, just imagine how good we can be, you know, and that we mean it, you know. And Coach Bonowitz, I'm sure you talked to him, he's played it at one of the highest levels. He was Mr. Basketball. He was that guy, but he also understood when he went to the next level, he had to lay into his own role. You know, he wasn't scoring 30 points a game like he was in high school and college, you know, and he had a lot of success in college. So both of us telling our stories and kind of championing that and, you know, giving a layout of what our goal is with the team.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you start talking about kids making that adjustment from star player to making sure that they fit the role so that you can build a good team. And obviously, as you said, Coach Bonowitz and the success that he had as a player at A&M, and just, again, not many guys get the opportunity to play at that level and then be as successful as he was. And I think back to my own situation when I was a player a long, long, long time ago. But in high school, I was kind of one of those kids that you described earlier that we were talking about that, you know, I scored and, you know, I played some defense occasionally, but, you know, I had the ball in my hands and was kind of the do everything guy.
Right.
And I got to college my freshman year, barely played. And then I started looking around and I looked at what we had coming back. And I said, you know, if I'm going to get on the floor, like what we need is not another guy who can score. And not to your point, not that I wasn't capable of doing that, but
right.
I looked at it and said, my role on this team, if I'm going to play as a sophomore, I got to be able to defend. And so I just kind of flipped the switch and just changed my mentality of who I was and what was important. And I figured out, if I want to get on the floor, this is what's going to do it for me. And sometimes I look at it and I say, wow, that was pretty amazing that I was able to do that. And then the other part of me says, I'm not sure why more players don't just kind of figure that out and do what the coach is like. It seems obvious, like, hey, the coach wants this. Maybe that's what I should try to do. And it seems like some guys are stubborn. So I don't know what your thought process is on that. And just as you see kind of both sides of that equation of guys who come in and they're just stubborn and they won't change. And then the other guys who adapt really quickly. Have you had both of those situations come through?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I'm still young. I'm still learning a lot. But one of the biggest things I learned was just accepting that people are different. You know, people's mindset are different. There's some things that we won't, you know, acquiesce to, that, you know, things that are just completely unacceptable, just like not being competitive or being disrespectful, you know, obvious things like that. But people are going to be different. Their maturity levels are different. When you get to meet their parents or where high school they come from and the players they play around, you get an understanding of, okay, he's coming from this. You know what I mean? So he doesn't necessarily, let's give him a chance to accept, embrace this culture. Let's let him feel success with this new, you know, culture that's around him. Let's give him a chance to at least feel what that feels like, and him get to see, okay, I could be successful doing this. You know, I could be successful in this role. There is success here. 'Cause that's one thing that I kind of learned early, just because I've been the best player on my team, but I've also not been the best player on my team. So you got to accept it early. Some of the guys don't, you know, some guys don't experience that until they get to college. So one thing that helped me, that amazed me, was, you know, you think about LeBron James and how ball dominant, how dominant he is, period, whatever team he's ever played on. But I remember a coach told me, how long do you think the ball is in LeBron James' hand? And I was like, man, it has to be in his hand at least 20 minutes, 25 minutes, you know, for how long a game.
Right.
You has to be. Nope. 6 minutes.
Yep.
I was like, whoa, 6 minutes? This is LeBron James. You know, nobody has the ball in their hand more than LeBron. You know what I mean? But I didn't know that prior to. So you kind of got to give these kids a chance to learn that kind of stuff and not be so dismissive towards that, you know. But if we get to a point where you're just not accepting it, you got to also know, okay, he's probably not going to develop this level of maturity within 4 years. That's fine. We're not, you know, going to get rid of him. But
right.
But there is guys in line ready to accept that level of maturity and who are you going to produce for us. So you got to make decisions like that as well.
That number with LeBron, I think, is telling in a few ways. And what I think always strikes me when I hear those numbers is there's so much more to the game than just when the ball's in your hands. And the players that only want to play hard when they have the ball, man, those guys are killers, because you look at what happens just in terms of movement and off the ball, and how valuable a guy, like you think about Curry and you think about how dangerous he is with the ball. But what really makes him dangerous is the fact that when he gives the ball up, he's moving. There's nobody with better movement or better footwork or better just making guys chase. And obviously the shooting makes chasing him even more important, but just the fact that he doesn't give the ball up. And you think about James Harden in Houston, passes the ball and then just goes and stands somewhere. Well, which guy's more dangerous? Which guy's more valuable to their team? It's no comparison. And then you factor in the other end of the floor where, let's face it, there are high school guys that play good defense, that are hard-nosed, that are tough, but playing defense at the college level is something completely different that most college players have to make a big adjustment to. And I think helping players to be able to see that there's more to the game than just having the ball in their hands, that's so critical for them to understand. Like you said, some guys probably, you know, you've experienced it. Some guys never understand it. And they go through 4 years wondering, well, how come I don't play? And how come I don't get the ball? And how come I don't get to do what I want to do? And then there's other guys who just kind of figured out, like, look, if I set screens and roll hard to the basket and rebound, then I can get 18 minutes a game, even though I may not score very much. But let's face it, it's a lot more fun to be out on the floor playing than it is sitting on the bench, no matter what you think your role is.
Right. You just want to be in the mix.
Absolutely.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoop Heads podcast, and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
When you're working with Coach Bonowitz, I know one of the things that is really important to young coaches is developing yourself as a coach and getting ready for whatever your next opportunity may be, whether that's the opportunity to advance on your current staff, whether that's the opportunity to go and maybe advance a level. Maybe that's the ability to go from being the second assistant to the first assistant, or from the first assistant to getting your first head coaching job. So when you're working with Coach Bonowitz, you're thinking about yourself as a young coach, somebody who's trying to grow in their career, look for, get ready for that next opportunity.
Yeah.
What do those conversations with Coach Bonowitz look like in terms of you trying to gather knowledge? Obviously you're watching what he does, you're seeing what he does every day, but when you guys sit down and talk, is there ever a time where you're talking about, hey, here's where I want to go in my career. Can you help me to get that, to understand what it takes to get to that point?
I spend so much time with Coach B. I've worked with him for 7 years. I kind of just watch his actions.
Yep.
You know, we talk. I mean, we talk constantly. We talk a lot. We talk so much that it's not like a formal sit down conversation about stuff like that. It just happens in our daily conversations, and it happens in, oh, okay, I got you, Coach. Now I see what you were talking about then, you know, or it might even be a couple years thing where I'm like, okay, Coach, I see what you meant, you know, a couple years ago when this happened and I disagreed with you and I didn't understand it. Now I see why you said that, you know, how many things come in fruition in the future. And it's more, I learn more honestly off of those kind of things than we do informal conversation. Cause you're if you're around Coach Bonowitz, you're going to get so many conversations about so many things that it won't even need to be a sit down, you know, hey, let's talk about my career. You know, they just naturally come, you know, or us being around other coaches, so many conversations, you know, just hanging out, like stuff like that. Honestly, we've talked so much more about that kind of stuff than us just having like a formal conversation.
What are some things that you've picked up then when you look forward in your career? What are some things that you feel like you've picked up from him through those conversations, through observation, that you think are going to be with you if we were to revisit this conversation 25 years from now when you're 50 years old and you're looking back on your career? What are some things you think are still going to be influencing you at that point?
Definitely the everyday, when I say fight, I don't mean like literally fight, but he's willing to fight every day. You know, you won't catch him sleeping ever. You know, he's willing to go at it every day, and you have to be that way as a coach, right? Like, I think my personality is different, and I've learned that from him, just kind of, okay, I can't, you know, you got to be on it every day. You have to be able to fight for not only your culture, but what your team stands for, what your principles. You have to be ready to go at it every day. You know, we'll be in the classroom. Coach, he has a group with the guys, talk to them about sports, talk to them about everything but basketball sometimes, you know. But when we get in the gym, boom, it's on, right? Like, if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're not getting to your, you know, your five to a side, your midline defense, you know, you're not pressing up, you're not getting in somebody's bubble, he's willing to fight. His energy is always there, no matter what. You know, whether we went recruiting the night before and we're both going off of 4 or 5 hours of sleep, you know, he's getting his workout in, he's getting in the gym, and he's ready to go. You know what I mean? That's what I'm going to learn from him. And obviously a bunch of different X's and O's, offensive wrinkles, stuff, and defense. But in terms of, you know, like a belief system and just what I've observed from him consistently every day is that.
to go along with that, what do you love about the Division III level of college basketball? What in your mind makes it special when you talk to players, whether it's on the recruiting trail or when you guys are sitting in the coach's office talking to each other, or you're talking to players during the season? What do you love? What's your main selling points for what makes Division III basketball so special?
I think the intimacy of it. I go to some of these Division I, Division II, you have like 7 to 8 staff members and, you know, just so many different people involved. I love specifically here at Concordia, it's just me and Coach. It's just me and Coach B. So we get to have a really tight-knit culture, really tight-knit voice. You know what I mean? I feel like we pull in the same direction a lot easier because of that. As far as D3 basketball, I honestly wish I had a better answer than that. I can tell you the misconception. I love seeing guys' reaction to it, especially recruits, when we come and bring them to a game and they're just like, oh, this level is kind of...
Yep, you know? I hear you.
And I remember my first reaction seeing a Division III game. You know, it was like, oh.
Did you see a lot of it growing up or no?
I honestly didn't. I just hooping around the, you know, rec centers and things like that. I've known guys who play at the Division I level, and you know, I'm competing with them. So in my head, I'm like thinking, okay, I'm holding my own against these guys, not really understanding like Division I guys don't go recruit people who are just holding their own. You got to produce. So when I went to go watch a Division III game, I'm like, whoa, like this pace is different. Like that guy could have easily played, you know, at a higher level. And, you know, you get a bunch of those guys, you get enough of those guys, you got a really successful Division III team. Cause I think it does take that, like a higher level guy than what you may think a Division III player is. But, I just remember being wowed by the physicality of Division III basketball and the pace of it.
I know we've talked to a couple of different Division III coaches, and one of the stories that several of them have told is just that number of times that they're sitting down with a kid and recruiting him, and maybe the kid initially has a negative reaction to Division III because everything that they hear is Division I. And so that's obviously what most kids are focused on. It's what they see on TV. It's what everybody's talking to them about and this and that. And the coaches will say, well, have you ever even seen a Division III game? And the number of kids that get recruited by Division III schools that have never even been to a Division III game to actually watch it and see it. And I think both players, and to your point, I think anybody who goes in and sits and watches it, the player's parent, the player themselves, you're going to be stunned by the high level of basketball that's being played and the pace, the physicality. It's just a totally different game than what high school kids are used to seeing.
Yes. Yes. No, it is. It's one of my favorite things to see. Not to be in, you know, not in a bad light, but just you already know what the consensus is. You already know what they're thinking prior to that game. You know, like, oh, okay. That's almost like that's cute type of thing. It's like, okay, wait till you watch this game. Like, and the parents and everything is like, you know, they end up liking it a lot. And I love when the guys get on campus and our guys, you know, do a good job of just kind of welcoming them. But also at the same time, like, hey, yeah, you're competing with me every day. You know, this is so it's fun to watch.
What does game day look like for you? What's your role on the day of a game? What are some of the things, responsibilities that you have to make sure that the team's getting ready and that Coach Bonowitz has all the things in place that he needs? I'm sure there's a million things, but maybe highlight just some of the things that are most important for you on game day.
For sure, going over scout with the guys. We do video slideshows with them. We use the Synergy shot chart for that. And going over that, going over teams based on out of bounds and what they're going to do that day on shoot around in the morning. That's my favorite time. What I love about coaching the most is preparing. I love the preparation of it. I feel like that's what coaching is. It's how you prepare. So doing that stuff is my favorite part. And, you know, after that, it's just the team mail and, you know, bringing them back in and talking to them about matchups and things like that. But the game day stuff is pretty fluent, especially when we get in conference. You know, you have the women playing before you, so there's only there's very limited time of what you can do on the floor prior to your game. So it's more about that morning session, the scout going over teams, you know, defense and based on how to balance their offense and going over our stuff.
What about on the practice floor? Do you guys, how do you divide up what your responsibilities are? Just what, what's going on the practice court when you guys are working together? Obviously Division III level, as you talked about, you don't have the Division I, 7, 8, 9 people and 10 managers and everything else going on. So how do you guys manage that and make sure that you're getting the maximum out of your guys for a practice session?
Well, we spend a lot of time talking about practice prior to, so whether I'm doing post guard split, he takes the post, I take the guards, or, hey, you know, this defensive session, he'll tell me, I want you to introduce this one. I want you to do this one. And if it's my scout, hey, let, you know, tell the team what we're doing off, what they're doing offensively, you know, how are we guarding that. And then, honestly, it's after that, it's kind of both of us coaching, both of us seeing what we see. He gives me the freedom to stop it if I see something we've talked about prior to, you know, practice, being able to just stop it. I pretty much have that freedom to do that. Obviously, as an assistant, you don't want to be stopping it all the time, but he, for the most part, Coach Bonowitz gives me the same amount of freedom to stop things as he does.
How do you guys balance out? I think that's one of the things that I always find to be interesting is when you're talking about coaches and being able to balance out when you stop it versus when you want to keep the flow of practice going, because clearly you can't stop everything because you'd be blowing the whistle every 2 seconds.
Yeah, you'll mess the flow up of practice.
Right, exactly. So how do you guys balance when you talk about that of, is there a particular focus in the practice where, hey, today we're focusing on boxing out on the weak side, and anytime that doesn't happen, we're going to stop it. Is that kind of how you guys approach it, or what's the tactic that you guys use?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, obviously we go, we do about 8 to 10 different things in practice, but there's like always 2 to 3 things that we really spent time talking about that we know, like we're just itching to stop it when we see it, you know? So whether he catch it first or I catch it first, we're stopping that. But it honestly, I just kind of gained a feel for when to stop it and when not, because I know what's been, I know when something's been bothering Coach B about our team. So I kind of don't stop, you know, I let him do that. I don't even mess with it because I know he's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no, I know.
Okay. You got like, I'm not even touching. I'm motivating. Okay. I know Coach B's been fired up about this one, so he's about to go on this one. But, you know, then the rest of the practice, I got a feel for, okay, we need to keep flow here. That last session, we had to stop it a few times. We need to get some flow here. So I'm just going to motivate. I'm just going to kind of what I think about just touching this. I'm going to just touch on this, but I'm going to say it in passing. I'm not going to just stop the whole flow of practice. I'm going to just say it in passing. Or a guy's coming to the sideline, hey, you might want to look for this. Or, hey, you didn't get all the way over to your low hole. Like things like that. You just kind of get a feel based off the prior session. Or category we just went over, you know, so just getting a feel for that stuff.
Yeah, it makes sense, right? And since you've been with them for 7 years, you guys start to have a little bit of understanding of what the other one does, doesn't do. And you obviously have to defer to Coach Bonowitz and how he runs things. And so you've learned, I'm sure, over the years that when your time is to step in and when your time is to lay back, and when you can hop in and be vocal, when it's better to just wait for a guy to come to the sidelines and have that conversation. It probably varies from player to player too, right?
Right. Yes, for sure. For sure. It does. Definitely. Some players are better to talk to after, you know, some players that you can lay in front of everybody and they handle it well because they're mature. So you kind of get a feel for that too. Yes,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you one final 2-part question. So part one, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as your biggest challenge? And then when you think about what you get to do every day at Concordia, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
My biggest challenge. I would say I always want to get, or I always want to get more and more organized with my systems, whether that be recruiting or collecting information on stuff we've done in prior years so we can use it. So I would say that's my biggest challenge. I want to get better and better at being more organized and collecting things and building better systems for what we do to make, you know, things flow and make it easier in the future.
That makes sense. All right. Biggest joy.
My biggest joy is just, I mean, honestly, coming in every day and recruiting and being able to see these guys grow and working with them and developing them, and just the grind of the season. I just love it. So
that's awesome. I mean, obviously not everybody gets to do that in their life, get up and do something that they love. So to be able to do that day in and day out is special. Before we get out, Adam, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, find out more about what you're doing. So if you want to share social media, email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, you can find me at CoachAG1181 on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
Cool. Hopefully we'll get some people reaching out. And again, Adam, can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule this morning to jump on with us. Truly appreciative. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit CoachingPortfolioGuide.com/Hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.